Welcome back for another episode of the Grief Observe podcast. I'm your host, Brad Morrell. I've been on vacation for a little bit and hopefully recharged, but happy to be back bringing you some more content on your journey through grief. As always, I'd like to invite you to be on the podcast. If you want to tell your story of grief, please contact me at griefobservepodcast@gmail.com or find me on Facebook, facebook.com/griefobservepodcast. I'll have all that in the show description. My guest today is Samantha Vance. Samantha is a professor at a college, and I found an article online that she had written about Victorian funerals and mourning practices. And if you've been listening to episodes past, you'll know I've been on the search for someone that could walk us through this. So I think I found the right person, and I really enjoyed this article. So without further delay, I'm going to bring on Samantha. Samantha, thank you so much for being with me today.
Hey, Brad, I'm super excited to be here. But as Brad told you, I'm an instructor at a college in Alabama. And the way I was introduced to the Victorians was through my graduate studies. I had a wonderful professor, and most of my graduate work was done in the Victorian era. And, like a lot of people, the macabre is fairly fascinating to most of us. And I had one particular class that was devoted to the Victorian monsters, the Draculas, the Jekyll and Hydes. And a lot of that was related to the Victorians and the way they treated death and their funerary practices and almost their obsession with how they buried their dead and even their fear of what happened to their bodies once they did die.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a very enlightening episode for me and others. And it's like I don't even know where to begin. I do have some questions that I want to work through, and I've got your article pulled up to kind of reference back to. But I guess maybe is it possible to provide a brief overview to kickstart us, or would you rather me give you like a, I don't know, a harder question to start off with?
Well, I guess we can start with Queen Victoria herself.
Yeah.
She, of course, was the monarch of the day, and she came to power at the ripe old age of 19. She married her first cousin, which, sets a lot of us back on our heels. But we have to remember this was pre-Darwin. This was before we understood genetics and some of the hiccups that intermarriage might cause. So she married her first cousin. He became Prince Consort Albert, and he was from Germany. So he brought a lot of the German traditions with him. Christmas changed for the Brits. A lot of the things that they did with their holidays changed. Her wedding is why we get married the way we get married. The white dress, the tiered wedding cake, all of those things are Victorian traditions. So a lot of what we do is all thanks to Victoria without us even realizing it. This goes all the way to our funerary practices because they were married for 21 years. And apparently, it was a very loving relationship because they had nine children. So they
Wow.
liked each other some anyway. And so nine children, even though Queen Victoria did not like babies, she had nine.
Wow.
And he died at the ripe old age of 42. And there is some debate about what killed him. The records tell us it was typhoid, but he had had some gastro intestinal problems before that. So we aren't really sure if it was typhoid or not. The Victorians suffered so many health issues due to hygiene, food preparation, all kinds of things, because it was not for the faint of heart. I mean, you'd pick up listeria from the milk you used in your tea.
Wow.
Anything would kill you. So we're not sure what killed him, but he died at 42. She was utterly and completely destroyed by his death. As a matter of fact, he had just returned from a visit to his very naughty son that they called Bertie. He later became Edward VII. Bertie had been being naughty at school, which was not unusual. And Prince Albert had gone to see Bertie to get him back in line and became ill after he had been to see Bertie. And Queen Victoria never forgave her son for Albert's death.
Wow. Now,
So
correct me
there's.
if I'm wrong, like the Victorian era was like 1837-ish through, the early 1900s, like
Yes, through the start of
19.
World War One. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, that's about right. And she was the longest reigning monarch right up until our recent queen mother.
Okay.
So that the Queen Elizabeth II was the longest reigning monarch after Victoria.
Wow.
So Prince Albert dies and Victoria is destroyed. So she goes into deep, deep mourning and really establishes these very elaborate mourning practices for the rest of the Victorian era. The deep mourning clothing, black from head to toe, the long veils that we've seen in the movies and on television, the elaborate funeral processions, and the funerals are really more about being seen and doing things the right way and all of those kinds of things rather than the grief process. And we still see some of that today, especially with my grandparents' generation. I'm a Gen Xer, so this would be the greatest generation. And if you didn't have the right funeral, your family didn't love you. Those kinds of things.
And I see a lot of that now. I see family members fighting over, what songs to play, what mom should be wearing, what graveyard should they be buried in. And a lot of it is based on status in a lot of ways. Okay. So maybe that's a good segue into I guess my first question for you.
Sure.
How much did social class, gender, maybe religion play into that Victorian era?
Well, class was everything because when we think about the Victorians, we think about, the top hats and the big poofy dresses and the gingerbread trim on the house, and that was very upper class. The Victorian gave rise to a middle class with the Industrial Revolution and machinery producing goods at a much cheaper rate, at a much faster pace, and it created a merchant class. But then, of course, the Bible tells us the poor will always be with us. Well, the poor were definitely with us in the Victorian era. But no matter what your class, burial was super important. It was so important, in fact, that we have what they call burial clubs. And it's really the birth of sort of burial insurance, for lack of a better term.
Okay.
And so families would pay into these burial club or these burial insurance policies, the lowest class of people, to make sure that their loved ones got a proper funeral. Because there was nothing worse than being buried in a pauper's graveyard,
Wow.
where you got a, plain pine box and you were wheeled out with a wagon. You didn't have a proper hearse. There were no flowers. There were no mourners. And you got buried in a common grave with no markings. And that was just the worst of the worst. And so people would do without the basic necessities of life, sometimes even food, to make sure they paid these burial premiums. Because it wasn't if one of your children died, it was when.
Wow.
And they wanted to make sure they had those things covered.
That's quite interesting. And you spoke about, when your children die. Do you feel like child death was more common back then than now, just due to the
Absolutely.
disease and lack of medicines and
Absolutely. Well, obviously, lack of medicine was huge, but also poor nutrition, water quality. Are you kidding me? Cholera was rampant. I think it was in 1858, they had the cholera outbreak in London. And of course, that was when they discovered it was a waterborne illness. And there's a whole thing that goes into that because the flushing toilet had just been invented. Well, every time they flushed the toilet, the water table at the bottom in their cesspits, sorry, in their basements would overflow. Well, all of that waste was seeping into the groundwater supply and contaminating that. And then they would go to the common pumps in the cities and the villages, and draw their water from a contaminated supply. So it became this constant cycle that you were constantly making people sick, and they didn't understand germs. They had the miasma theory. So people were constantly sick from cholera and random, they called it gastrointestinal, diseases. Well, people died all the time, and they would just say, well, it's a stomach ailment.
Wow.
And so children died from listeria or cholera or arsenic poisoning because, women had arsenic in their makeup
Wow.
because it made their skin lighter and smoother. Well, yeah, I'm sure it did. And so, the Victorian era would kill you because it was Tuesday.
Well, one of the things that you'd mentioned in your article, you started it out and you said, "Why all the fuss?" And literally in quotations, it said, "being seen," right? And that, so it seems like they were trying to be seen in the good times and the bad times, whether it's putting arsenic in makeup or, burying a loved one, it was about show, right?
Everything was appearance based. And if you don't believe me, look at their fashion, look at their burial procedures, look at their funerary procedures. Everything was about trying not to disappear. And in 2024, we're working on keeping up with the Joneses.
Sure.
We're working really hard on being seen now as well. Pick up any social media platform and you'll see just how desperately we're trying to be seen. And it's the same thing for them. The more elaborate your funeral, the more important you were. Queen Victoria's funeral, when she died in 19,
Yeah, right.
she wanted an all-white funeral with six white horses and this completely elaborate all-white hearse and everything. And her death was a little bit sudden. I mean, she was old, they knew it, but the horses were ill-trained and they started acting up. But it was so important that her funeral be exactly what she wanted it to be that they used these ill-trained horses because being seen like you wanted to be seen was the most important thing.
Wow. So let's take a segue here. You had mentioned she wanted all white, and we're so used to seeing, especially in that time, all black, right?
Yes.
What did that symbolize for them?
I think the all white for her was this transition for her away from the all black that she wore for the rest of her life after Albert died.
Ah, okay. So she kind of remained in black and mourning, if you
Yes.
will, for a lifetime.
Yes, she did. Children were typically buried with all white, with that concept of innocence or purity. They had all white, hearses that were very tiny, and they would be drawn by small ponies. But you did see either all white or all black a lot of times with their funerary processions. But I do think for Queen Victoria that it was her breaking away from that all black that she had worn for the rest of her life in mourning for Albert. And she felt like she was finally free because she was with him once again.
So tell me more about like veils and things like that. Why do you think
Okay.
that was important to them, or where did that begin? Or I don't know. You take that one over.
Okay. A show of emotion for the Victorians would have been excessive, rude, impolite, out of the way, one bridge too far, whatever you want to say. And so they kept their faces covered completely, especially widows, because as we know, we grieve sometimes unexpectedly. Before you and I came on the air, we talked about different ways that I grieve personally, and mine's a little bit of a fit and start. Like I'll smell coffee or my grandmother's perfume, and sometimes I'll have a little spell. Well, that would have completely been out of the way for Victorians. You did not show emotion in public. You did not do anything to excess that anyone could have ever seen. So, this concept of completely covering the face ensured that you were never out of the way or out of line in public that anyone could have ever seen. And so, you kept all of that hidden, all of those emotions wrapped up, all of that repressed and oppressed. And we know that the Victorians were an incredibly repressed and oppressed society emotionally, in every way imaginable, and that was just a symptom of the way they lived.
So what you're telling me, as a therapist, I probably would not have been able to eat very well in this society.
Yes, no,
These
you
people would
well,
not come to therapy, would they?
you there were other ways that they sought those kinds of things, and not to drift into something that's inappropriate for your podcast, but there was every form of brothel and house of ill repute in London. There were between 8 and 80,000 prostitutes on the streets of London in the mid 1800s. And so while they were so repressed, outwardly, human nature is still what it is. And so we forget the Victorian era is the time that we have Jack the Ripper. This is the people, this is the group of people that give us, baby farms where women were forced to drop their babies off to these women who either raised them on the down low or simply murdered them, like Amelia Dyer. Serial killers were rampant during the Victorian era, but we forget that because we look at this polish and the top hats and the poofy dresses and the gingerbread trim.
That
All
is
of
so
this.
interesting. And now I see why you were talking about like the monsters, where your articles and the Victorian thought process was going with this. But yeah, that's amazing. And it tells me that even today, we have people who try to find, I guess, what I call cheap anesthetics, things to help me stop hurting. And maybe I don't have to attend to this publicly, like whether it be, drinking, other people, sex, like you're speaking of, like whatever it is, something that will make me feel good for a little while where I don't have to think about this person that I've lost. I
For
don't know.
sure. Well, and in the early 1800s, before they really understood, opium was available over the counter. Like you would go buy Advil, they would go buy laudanum, which is liquid opium. And well, yeah, that solves everything. Got a teething baby? Put a couple of drops of laudanum on their gums and they quit crying. Well, yeah, they do. So they found cures for everything in pharmaceuticals. And it's just like you said, all of the problems that we have in 2024, they had them and they sought cures just like we do.
There is nothing new under the sun, right? And it was amazing. I made a connection in my head just a few minutes ago when you were speaking about these people wanting to be seen. It was about them. And now we live in the world of selfies. And like you said, social media is where anybody can be a star. It's I remember my cousin and me were trying to do these recordings back when VHS recorders first came out. These things were huge. I mean, it was about the size of a Volkswagen, and you're carrying them on your shoulder, and we were doing our own little newscast. We would have been so awesome back in the day had YouTube been around. But it sounds like there really is nothing new under the sun. And and now we're talking about, ways to cope, and they were looking for their ways to cope with grief just like we do today.
For sure. And they did things like drape themselves in all black. And, and they had superstitions and quirky little things that they did. When someone died in the home, they turned all the pictures face down. They draped all the mirrors in black. They stopped all the clocks. They would have the viewing or the wake in the home. But when they would remove the body from the home for burial, they always took the body out head first, so that the deceased person couldn't call other family members with them. So there were all kinds of little quirky things that they did to make themselves feel better. Because like I told you, for the Victorians, death was around every corner. And so anything they could do to somehow protect themselves or make themselves feel better about the possibility that they were next, they did all of those things.
Yeah, it's I definitely want to lean into this superstition, but also want to throw out kind of a funny but not funny story. My daughter, She's been married almost a year. They've been living in an apartment, and she called me last night. She's like, "Dad, I found this house. We really like this house, but it's part of an estate. Does that mean someone passed away in this house?" I said, "It may not. You know, they could have passed away in hospice or something like that." But I'm like, "Does it matter?" But now you're talking about superstition, and for these people, it did matter. These things mattered completely, right?
Absolutely, it did. Well,
Wow.
and they were fearful of death all the time. And it wasn't just the death itself they were fearful of. Medical schools, a lot of them got their start in the 1800s. And we know that medical schools need certain things to operate, and doctors need certain materials with which to learn. And one of those materials is a cadaver.
Sure.
Well, there's only one source for cadavers. And in the 1800s, the early 1800s, there were very limited sources for those cadavers, especially in the UK. It was condemned prisoners. Well, as
Wow.
more and more students entered medical schools, there were simply not enough criminals being hanged on a regular basis to provide the cadavers that they needed. So this gives rise to, of course, capitalism always provides. This gives rise to resurrection men. And this was a group of individuals whose sole job was to provide bodies for the medical schools. And so they would dig up freshly buried corpses and sell those to the medical schools.
Wow.
And this became a huge fear for Victorians of the day.
Now that's interesting, and you've got some pictures on your article of like these cage-like type things over graves, which I know was to prevent grave robbing, whether that be through, trying to grab a person's ring or whatever, or now I'm hearing maybe the entire body.
And interestingly enough, just like with everything else, legislation did not always keep up with criminals. The penalties for taking rings and items were far more severe than taking the body. So the resurrection men would take the body out, strip it, put the clothes, the rings, the jewelry, everything back in the grave, bury
Wow.
it, and just take the body, because there was a fine for taking the body, but you could be hanged for taking the goods.
Wow, that is interesting.
And so, and then we have the Anatomy Act of 1832, which allowed them to begin to use bodies from poorhouses and indigent people. And so that changes things a little bit. And it really took 150 years for the legislation to really catch up to this problem. But Victorians were terrified of this. So you saw the picture of the cages, over the coffins, of course, over the graves. Of course, those were for very wealthy people. The poor just had to worry about it, or the family had to sit in the cemetery until the body decomposed to the point that it wasn't valuable enough to the hospitals. The other thing they started doing is they started building watchtowers in the cemeteries, and they would put people in the cemeteries to guard the graveyard. And they worked, guess what? The graveyard shift.
Ah.
And so we have the term today, working the graveyard shift, based on these people who would sit out and watch these cemeteries to protect them from the resurrection men.
You know, I've never even asked where that term came from, and I should have known that, but that makes total
Victorian.
sense. Yeah.
It's Victorian. So these people, they feared death, and they feared what happened to them after death. So for them, death was a scary thing in every possible aspect. They
Did
wanted people to think highly of them. It was just a scary thing for them.
these people have a lot of religious beliefs as far as after death, or no?
Yes, because Church of England, that was everybody was Church of England. I mean, not everybody, but that was the predominant thing. And so there was a lot of ritual that was associated with it, because the Anglican Church does have a very prescribed way that you bury people. But it was really what you did. It was almost like you're checking the boxes.
Okay.
They would have been faithful because this is what you did. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. And it was just like today. A lot of people were very, very faithful to their religion, and a lot of people, it became, well, this is what my mom did, so this is what I'm going to do. She did it because that's what her grandmother did. So it was a check the box kind of thing, but it varied by family, just like it does today.
Interesting. I've mentioned before on this podcast that I used to be in jewelry, and I came across some mourning jewelry, specifically hair lockets.
Yes.
What were some of the purposes of, and I've not only seen just hair lockets, but I've seen hair pictures like we were kind of talking about before, where people may create this flower, this very intricate flowery type of photo through not only one person's hair, but maybe a whole family's, hair, from different people who have passed. Tell me more about that.
Okay, well, to start with the jewelry, mourning jewelry or mourning attire, they were only allowed to wear jet, and jet is black, and so that would have fit with the mourning attire. And a lot of times with the jewelry, they would have this beautiful locket or this pendant or whatever, and within the jet, there would be a glass piece that contained hair woven, braided, fashioned into an intricate pattern, and this hair would have been from the loved one who passed. And the idea was they're keeping a piece of this person with them. And of course, I think maybe it's tied to this idea of relics. We keep our relics from our past saints. They're very precious to us. And so this is almost that concept of this relic. Hair obviously doesn't decompose, so it's not anything that's going to be stinky or gross. And so this was very precious to them. And then there's this elaborate artwork that we see that is fashioned from sometimes one person's hair and sometimes, an entire family. And it's incredibly elaborate, very artisanally done, and incredibly beautiful. But that was the Victorian way. Even their pumping stations for their sewage plants were, cast iron and beautifully done. They did nothing half measure. Everything they did was always beautifully done. And so I think this is just their way of holding on to a piece of that. And for those of you that may be out there going, okay, that's weird and kind of gross, and I'm not holding on to my grandmother's hair. In 2024, you can take your loved one's ashes and have them turned into a diamond. So there are things in 2024 that we do that are the same, a little different, but they're still the same because we want to hold on to those pieces of those people.
Fantastic segue into, I was going to ask you later, but maybe this is a good place to do it. How much of that Victorian era and their thoughts and practices do you think have pushed into modern days?
Almost all of them. We do things without thinking of them. Obviously, in the Deep South, it's probably more so than in other places. When we go to a funeral, typically the color we wear is what?
Black.
Black. Well, that is directly related to the mourning clothes that the Victorians wore. When we leave the funeral home, we have this hearse and we have this huge procession, right? And of course, that is absolutely Victorian. We put our dead on display and we file past them and we say things like, oh, they look so good. Do they? I mean, if you really break down what we do in our funerary practices, not a lot of it makes logical sense. It might make emotional sense, but a lot of it is ritualistic. It is things we do because it's what we've always done, and it was what our families did. It's what our mothers did. It's what our grandmothers did. It's what our fathers did and our grandfathers did. These are the things we do when we bury our dead, because it's the things we do that make us feel better, because these are the boxes you check. Well, these are the boxes you check because this is what we've done for generations, because it's what the Victorians told us we do. All of the things from the meal to, I mean, because if you think about when you've just lost someone that you love that's very close to you, you don't want to eat yet. Eating is a huge part of what we do in our funerary practices. All
Sure.
of that is very Victorian. And
Wow.
the flowers, oh my gosh, funeral flowers are just hella expensive. They're so expensive.
Yeah.
Well, the Victorians had a very practical reason for their funeral flowers.
Yes. Speak of
And
that.
yeah, embalming didn't exist. And so when someone died, they would put that body on display for a day or so, two maybe. And the flowers that they would surround the casket with had a very practical purpose because
Right.
decomposition doesn't smell good.
Right.
And so those flowers served a purpose to mask that decomposing body's smell. So we keep all of those practices as part of what we do because it makes us feel better. Again, because it's just what you do.
Right, and it's
Hey.
not even about necessity anymore. It's about ritual and keeping those things alive, no pun intended. But it reminds me of a movie from years ago. I don't know if you remember the Tom Hanks and Paul Newman movie Road to Perdition. I don't know if you ever
Yes.
saw that, but I think Tom Hanks' uncle or someone had passed away. And you see this man, and his coffin is on ice. And I'm like, wow, we take a lot for granted whenever we have our funerals. And the fact that we are able to see our loved ones, sometimes even 4 or 5 days after their passing, I think we take some of these practices now with embalming for granted. In fact, I've had two funeral directors on and embalmers on within the last month, and
Okay.
they were quite interesting to listen to. And but I do believe we just take a lot of that for granted. But it is interesting to know that, I guess, the ritualistic side of, okay, let's keep sending flowers even though they're not playing the same purpose. That's interesting.
Yeah, we do it now almost as a sign of respect.
Right.
Funerals are so expensive and all of that ritual. And if we really stopped to think about why do we do these things, we have to think, well, we don't do them for any purpose. We do them because of this ritual. It's what you do, and it's what you are expected to do. Now, I think some of this is changing with the generations. I'm seeing this change, especially with Gen Xers and millennials. We don't go to the cemetery to see our loved ones who have passed because, as a person of faith, my grandmother's not there.
Right, A absolutely.
I don't feel the need to go put flowers on her grave. She's not there. She's gone home.
Right.
And so I think younger generations feel less compelled to participate in some of these funerary practices than some of the older generations do. And I know I got some folks clutching their pearls as I say that, but I do think that's a generational shift. I do think it's a generational change.
I'm trying to look it up as we're speaking here, and there is a funeral museum in Virginia.
Okay.
I'm trying to find what it's called. It's on the tip of my tongue. Simpson Funeral Museum in Chatham, Virginia. And that's spelled Chatham, and I think that's how they pronounce it. But regardless, they've got some of these older things, from years ago on display. And it's really interesting. I follow them on Facebook, and just to see some of the older caskets, and well, in their case, coffins. And I didn't know the difference between coffins and caskets till recently. And I think it was one of the funeral directors on. A casket is what is most common for us. It's very symmetrical, whereas a coffin is kind of like what we think about, Dracula was in or whatever.
Yeah,
It's the body forming type of
okay. Didn't know that
container.
either.
Yeah, isn't that
Didn't
interesting?
know that either. Okay, got
But
it.
this Simpson Funeral Museum has a lot of those, and some of them even had like the window on them. Like, so you could be fully enclosed but still see the face of that individual. And again, I'm wondering how much of that was, okay, this person is decomposing,
Yes.
but their loved ones still want to see them. I don't
Well,
know.
and some of that was, and I can't remember the actual year for the, because there was a safety coffin and there was a
Sure.
patent that was done, and I believe it was the late 1800s, maybe early, I mean the late 1700s, early 1800s. I just looked it up as 1829. And being buried alive was a real fear for these people. When I tell you everything about death scared them, everything scared them. Because, they didn't have a stethoscope. They had a piece of wood, with a flute at the end of it that you held up to your ear. Their medical technology was, non-existent for a long time. And so the way they checked to see if you were breathing in the early 1800s is they put a mirror under your nose, and if it fogged up, you were breathing. If it
Right.
didn't fog up, you weren't, and they buried you.
Well, and that makes a lot of sense, and especially the fact that you called it a safety coffin. And you think today, if somebody goes through the embalming process, there is no way they can be alive, period. But if they didn't have the embalming process, there was a chance back then, right?
Yes. Well, this
Wow.
safety coffin had a bell.
I recall some of that, and they
And it
would
would,
send
yeah,
it
and
up, and
it would be
yeah.
attached to their toe or their finger or whatever. And so if they started moving around in the coffin, the bell would ring. And this was a legit thing. Of course, it would have been for the upper classes, but again, one more example of how terrified they were of everything about death.
Wow. It's interesting, and as we're talking, I know some of this may be I don't know, a little rough on the edges for someone who has lost someone recently,
Yeah.
but I think it is interesting to see that, although some things have changed, some things have not changed. Very, very interesting.
Yeah, one of the other things I wanted to touch on was something that they did that a lot of people find odd or disconcerting, and that is their death photography, their
Yes.
postmortem photography.
Yes.
And they called it memento mori. And what happened was a lot of these burial clubs that we mentioned earlier, part of that policy payout would be a postmortem photograph.
It was expensive, right?
Photography was incredibly expensive. Of course, the Victorians invented photography, and it started very rough, but as the 1800s progressed, they, perfected the technique. And they would make pictures of your deceased loved ones. And a lot of times it would be with the whole family.
Yes.
They would prop the baby up and the whole family would be there with them. They even had stands constructed to hold the deceased person up as they made the photographs. And expensive photography was very expensive. So this was part of that burial package that they would get. And so these photographs are very disconcerting for us a lot of times. But we talk about Photoshop in 2024. Well, that's not new. A lot of times they would paint the eyes open on the photographs so that people would feel more like the photograph would feel more lifelike to the family. And so there were all kinds of things that they did with that. And I know a lot of families make photographs of their loved ones in the casket at the
Yes.
funerals, and that's a very common practice. So as we think this in the Victorian era makes us a little uncomfortable, there are family members that do it even today.
You know, one of my he was my first friend ever. I guess I was in kindergarten or getting ready to start kindergarten, and I knew that Bobby's father had passed away, and he said, I'm gonna bring you a picture of my dad so you can see, who he was. And I'm like, yeah, that's great, And he brought a picture, me being like 4 years old, and there is his dad in a casket. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like it totally wigged me out as a kid,
I'm
But
sure.
if you think about it, this has been around for many, many, many years. Now,
It
one
is.
thing I found really interesting in my research, and maybe you can tell me if this is true or false, seems true. But pictures took a little while to, I guess, capture. So the deceased person's face always seems much clearer than their family members because their family is actually moving while that picture is capturing. Is that true?
Yes, the way photography and the technology work was it took a long time for the image to transfer onto the plate. So even the slightest movement of the family members, they're breathing.
Right.
And so even the slightest movement, a lot of times, would blur that image ever so slightly.
Right.
And so you do see a difference. As the technology advanced, that went away. You also see mother photographs, which are super creepy because you see this baby, and then this mom is draped in this weird looking fabric, and it's like the mom is not supposed to be there. It's supposed to be the picture of the baby. Those are kind of creepy looking as well. There's a lot of things that Victorians did that we see as creepy, and they just thought that was just how you
It's
did things.
normal, right?
Yeah, you really want to see some creepy things? Look up Victorian kid Halloween costumes. One of the other things with photography is some of their spiritual photography. Speaking of Photoshop, mediums were all the rage in the mid to late 1800s. And again, mediums capitalized on the Victorians' fear of death. If they could figure out how to pierce the veil, if they could figure out how to come back from the dead, if they could figure out how to do all of this, they would. In the United States, they had a very famous set of sisters, the Fox sisters. Of course, they were total frauds, but they, made headlines everywhere. And famous people got wrapped up in this spiritualist movement. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the author of Sherlock Holmes, was a devoted spiritualist. He even brought Harry Houdini, or tried to bring Harry Houdini into the spiritualist movement. And interestingly, Houdini's mom was Hungarian, refused to speak English. Like, his mom refused to speak English. And so Doyle dragged Houdini to one of these medium seances or whatever. And, oh, I'm getting your mom, Mr. Houdini. And she says, da 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 da. Well, Houdini was furious because his mom would never have spoken English. And so he stormed out, and he and Doyle had a big falling out. And so, spiritualism was rampant, and they had spiritual photography. There's a very famous one with Mary Todd Lincoln, and Abraham Lincoln is over her shoulder. So this was a huge part of the Victorians' experience with death as well. This constant quest for what's next? How can I contact? Can technology, are you ready? Can technology help me get to the other side? And you and I talked briefly about some of these shows on television and using technology. There's
Nothing's
nothing.
changed again, right?
There's nothing
It's
new.
always been. And I believe that like you had stated, people trying to capitalize on someone else's grief, it's a horrible thing. And I would take it down to and I'm not stating that every place would be like this, especially it's no disrespect to any funeral director or anybody that I've had on before, but I know there are certain places that would be like, wouldn't your loved one like this casket as opposed to this one? And it's like, I understand there's operational costs of a funeral home, but at the same time, this is the worst time to play into, somebody's emotions and put guilt on them about something that, especially like you and I were speaking, from my standpoint, I am a believer and my body may be in the grave, but I'm not going to be there. I'm elsewhere. So if you want to put me in a pine box, if you want to throw me in the dirt, face down, it does not matter. I don't, there's part of me that's like, well, it's my body. I've had it all these years and, but at the same time, I'm not going to be there.
No, not at
So
all.
anyway, I just feel like it's a bad time to play into anybody's emotions, whether it's through spirituality practices like you're speaking of, or whether it's as simple as, what kind of funeral would your loved one want, and tried to talk them into something that they can't afford or where that money would be better spent elsewhere. I would love to know, like, price tags and things of what these Victorian people actually spent. Did they overspend in their mourning practices?
Absolutely, they did, because the whole point was, to be seen. If I don't have the right funeral, then it reflects poorly on me and on my loved one. We have to be buried properly. That what will the neighbors think? And it was a very, and especially for the middle class, because the middle class constantly felt like they had something to prove. Because they were not landed gentry, they were not titled, so they were constantly, they were, nouveau riche, they had new money. So they were constantly made to feel as though they were less than anyway. So what better way to prove that I am just as good as you than do a, kick the dog in the butt funeral, than really get after it and show you just how important I was. And the huge Victorian monuments that you see in the cemeteries, the big angels and the giant things, all of that comes back to see me, see me, see me, and see me after I'm dead. I'm going to make sure you never forget me.
That is so interesting. I am curious about length of time. How long did they go into mourning? And one of the things that I even think about, probably, well, I remember this in you said you were a, kind of a 70s kid. I was not far behind. I was born in 75. So I recall people wearing, especially, well, men wearing the armbands that said, hey, don't mess with me. I just lost someone. I'm mourning. And they would wear that for a time period. And that seems to have faded away. There may be some places, of course, you see, like if a police force has lost one of their officers, they still put the black band around the badge. And I know that is a sign of mourning, but getting back to the time factor, how long did these people truly mourn?
It depended on the relationship to the lost person. A widow was expected to wear black, complete black, for a solid year. Then she could go to gray or pale lavender for 6 months, and then another 6 months she could go to muted colors. And I mean, so this was a lengthy process. If you were a brother, you wore black for 6 months. And so depending on the relationship with the person, it depended on how long you were expected to mourn. And of course, a widow is expected to mourn the longest. And of course, we know who established that. That was Queen Victoria. Everybody followed her lead. If you did less than that, of course, you were looked at askance and, oh, she just, I can't believe she has jumped right out there and started dating. Oh, wait, does that sound familiar? Because it should. We sit in judgment of people who lose loved ones all the time and start trying to live their lives. Immediately, we assume that, oh, well, she must not have loved him or whatever. We see them out for coffee with someone and we're, oh, is she dating already? I mean, so even though we think ourselves very enlightened in 2024, we have the same expectations that they did at 1824.
I've talked on this podcast several times about I'm not a fan of the five stages of grief because it prescribes a certain formula. It sounds like the Victorian era was absolutely prescribing a certain formula, and the one word that keeps popping up as you're talking is guilt. That these people must have had this immense guilt that stated, if I don't mourn the proper time, then I'm not doing it right, or people are going to judge and view me. I've heard people state, you know what? Well, I state, people are going to judge you regardless. But I've recently heard someone say, it's not your business what other people think about you. And I'm like, you know what? You're probably right. So I don't know, I just see so much guilt. Like you were stating, I have seen widows who do date 2, 3 months after the loss of someone, that's what they feel is right for them. I can't tell them that, you know what, you should be wearing black all year and then it should go to grays. You know, it's like, why do we tell people what they should do or how they should grieve? But it sounds like it's been that way all along.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's kind of human nature. But the Victorians were the champs of, I feel better about myself by condemning someone else. That was their calling card. They invented every ism there is to invent. They loved a social program, workhouses, poorhouses. They loved someone should do something about this. This is a problem. Someone should do something about this. That was their stock in trade. And so anytime they got the opportunity to judge, condemn, whatever, they did. Well, when you spend your life doing that, you also have to reap what you sow. And so when it came time to bury somebody, they had to worry about constantly, well, who is sitting in judgment of me at this point? That's a hard way to live.
I know they sent out mourning cards and stationery and
They
things
did.
like that back then. And if you think about it, when you go through a visitation line, we do the exact same thing.
Yep, theirs had black bands on them, and the stationery had to be just so. The quality of the paper, had to be just right, and the printing. And it's still today. Some people, oh, that was an embossed death announcement, and all of these things. And it's very, very, very Victorian. We still get hung up in the trappings of death as opposed to grieving the loss of the loved one. That's Victorian. All of it is Victorian.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. I just keep coming back to there's nothing new. Nothing new.
And the more you study the Victorians, the more you understand that we keep recycling human nature. We keep recycling the same problems. We keep recycling the same solutions. We're not self-aware enough to understand that the solutions didn't work 200 years ago, and hey, they're not working today either.
Right. Is there anything from the Victorian era that you think we could learn from in today's society that maybe we're not thinking of or not practicing like they did?
Well, I think a lot of things, we're doing everything the same way. The way we treat our poor, our social class system, our gender issues, all the things that we do are the same things that they do, whether it's the criminal justice system, whether all the social issues that everybody wraps their arms around and screams about, y'all, they're not new. They're 250 years old. And if you go back and look at how we've been handling them for the last 250 years, we're doing the same things. And if you study the Victorians at all, you will see we're the same people. We think ourselves so enlightened. We think ourselves so bright and so open-minded in 2024. We're not. We're not. We continually condemn.
Do you think the only difference that I can sit here and fathom is the fact that technology has us more informed than what they were? You know, that we can see these things quicker or have more of a knowledge base of certain things, but at the same time, nothing's changed.
Interestingly, we think we have the world at our fingertips. Well, the Victorians would have three and four newspapers that came out in a 24-hour period. They
Wow.
had a 24-hour, almost a 24-hour news cycle, just like we do. It was just in print. They invented photography and they started making pictures of naked people. We are the only generation who has produced more pornography than the Victorians.
Really?
And that's just because of the internet.
Yeah.
If we can corrupt something as human beings, we do so. And so information, all of these things that we think would make things better, they don't. We just recycle those same problems. So the Victorian, that 24-hour news cycle, they had it. And we think fake news is something new. We think clickbait is something new. Well, journalists in 1854, if they didn't have a headline, They just made one up.
Wow.
And so all of the things that we think of are new problems in 2024 are not new at all.
So the National Enquirer was way before, there was something way before
Absolutely.
that,
The National Enquirer had its roots in the Victorian era. Absolutely.
Wow. Inquiring minds want to know back in the Victorian era,
Absolutely.
right?
Absolutely. So, there's
Wow.
tons of things, and I could talk about the Victorians for days and days, but I know you have other things to do.
Well, tell me what we may be missing. I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I've tried to look through your article and make sure I'm not skipping anything I wanted to cover. But what are some anything else that you can think of that we've missed or that you want to talk about, or any personal loss, or you just take this wherever you want to go.
Well, I think people need to understand how Victorian we are. And I really want people to think about why we do the things that we do, whether it's our funerary practices or our wedding rituals or our Christmas traditions. For those of us that are of the faith, we all have a Christmas tree in our living room. Why? Well, it's because Prince Albert brought that tradition over from Germany when he married Queen Victoria.
Wow.
It did not exist as part of the British or American tradition before then. We follow blindly things that people suggest that we do. And what I would really love is for people to think about where a lot of these things come from and why we do them. It doesn't mean they're wrong or bad. I'm going to have a Christmas tree every year because I love it. It
Right.
doesn't bother me that it came from Prince Albert. I just love to know that that's why I do that. As far as our funerary practices and traditions, I don't think there's anything wrong with the way we do things. I just want people to know why we do them the way we do them and to think about what they mean and are they important and what do they mean to them. I just think that's important.
Yeah, that's it is interesting, and I know I've probably said it 100 times in this podcast, and people are probably tired of it. They've probably clicked off of it by now, but there truly is nothing new. There really isn't. And we just keep, well, even with people I see, I see nothing but adults and couples, but I don't see children. But I always state to them, we drag our lives as children into our adult lives. It's things that we struggled with in childhood are likely things that are still bothering us in our adult lives. And it sounds like everything just moves forward. We don't ever close out any part of history, it seems. It's just it just keeps moving forward. And like you stated, I think the worst part is we don't even know why. Why do we do these things?
We just blindly do the same things we've always been doing, whether it's, traditions or politics or religion or anything. We just sort of lean forward and move our feet. And I would like for people to think about why they do the things that they do. Doesn't mean they're wrong. Just think about why they do things the way they do.
Do you feel, and I hate to put you on the spot with this question, but I do a lot of research in everything that I do in life now. It's almost nauseating how much I'll research a certain topic or whatever until I'm done with it. But do you feel like we're a lazy society where we don't want to do our own research?
For sure. Well, because it's so easy. You pick up your phone and you scroll through until you find something that you think you might want to read, and you click on it, and there's everything you could ever possibly want. One of the things that I have observed in my own students is they have almost developed an evolutionary ability to sort through information because they are bombarded with it all the time.
Oh, yes.
They don't go look for information because the billboards blink at them as they drive down the road. They are bombarded with information so much and so often that they don't go look for it, and they don't have the ability to discern and sort through it, because literally they scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll, and it's all right there at their fingertips. So
Makes
they do
sense.
not research. They do not go looking for answers. They expect the answer to appear as they're scrolling. And the
Yeah.
scary part is, an answer does appear as they're scrolling. It's just not always the right one, and they're not capable of discerning whether it is correct, right, credible, or anything. And that's one of the observations that I'm seeing in my students as we're moving into this age of readily, available technology everywhere.
Yeah, a few days ago on my Facebook page, on the Grief Observe podcast Facebook page, I posted this video called Rat Race, and it's this cartoon, and it just shows these rats always chasing something more, whether it's a brand or whether it's a feeling or a substance or whatever. And these rats look miserable. And I really feel like that's just how we are. We're always searching for something as opposed to trying to figure out why am I the way I am, or where did I come from, or whatever it is. We're just always looking for the fix as opposed to the problems.
Well, and that is Victorians. They are the ones who invented modern technology. The cell phone you walk around with in your pocket came from Alexander Graham Bell's photophone. Photography, Joseph Swan's light bulb wasn't Thomas Edison, by the way. He was a hack. All of these things, all of this technology, all of these inventions, the automatic loom, the cotton mills, all of these things that we constantly chase, this materialism, all of this was born of the Victorian era. The middle class, we want the newest thing, reproduction furniture, because the middle class wanted their houses to look like the upper class. So they would buy reproduction furniture. The Victorians were obsessed with Egyptology. So you have all these scarab beetle reproduction jewel, all the scarab beetle reproduction jewelry from the Victorian era, because it was all about the stuff and the things. And they would have these elaborate mummy unwrapping. Oh, I forgot to talk about that. These elaborate mummy unwrapping parties, speaking of death, and it was another way they controlled that. So all of this stuff, the stuff, the stuff, the stuff, all of that was Victorian. So this rat race and this constant quest for the newest, the best, the fastest, the quickest, the best dressed, all of that is Victorian, every bit of it.
Wow. Tell me more about the mummy thing.
Okay, I should have written this down and I forgot.
No, you're good.
The Victorians loved Egyptology. They loved all of that. And King Tut's tomb was discovered in 1922. So that was the very tail end of the Victorian era. And actually it was after that. But they loved Egyptology. The Napoleonic Wars kind of started this European invasion of Egypt's history, but the Victorians loved it. And so any kind of, Egyptian artifacts they could get their hands on, they clamored for it. As a matter of fact, there's a huge obelisk in London right now, Cleopatra's Needle. And the story of how they got that to London is absolutely fascinating. I'll try to put a link up for that. But anyway, they would collect all these artifacts and they would have mummy unwrapping parties. So they would purchase mummies that had been robbed from graves and they would unwrap them. Now, for a group of people who were so obsessed, concerned about being respectful in death, this is sort of the ultimate irony. How are you so disrespectful of this dead body? Well, because it was Egyptian. It didn't count. And why didn't it count? Why didn't it count? Because it was African.
Oh,
They were less than.
wow.
And so if you really start unpacking that was, of course, that ethnocentric, sort of inherent racism, that European concept that African, especially ancient African, was less than. And so this mummy became property. It was not really a person.
Wow.
And so they would have these elaborate mummy unwrapping parties, and it became this huge social event. And the best, only the best families had these best mummies, and it was everything.
That is interesting.
So it was really a thing for them. And there would be Egyptology, oh gosh, excavations, and they would come back with all of the artifacts that they found. And a lot of that has been repatriated to Egypt, thankfully. But during the Victorian era, and a lot of it is still in the British Museum.
Wow. Well, Samantha, I appreciate you being on the podcast, but I've got one last question that I'll ask you, and then I'll let you just close us out if there's something else that you want to state. But I guess what would you tell someone who does want to break away from traditions as far as a funeral of a loved one? Or maybe that someone did break away from those traditions and has some type of guilt over not doing it the way their family always did it, or the way the Victorians did it. Like, what would you tell those people?
Tell them don't worry about it, because the reason the Victorians did it was to be seen. It doesn't have anything to do with grieving or the grief process. Your loved one's not here. He or she is gone. That person is no longer a part of this world. What you do to grieve is not their problem. If you want to do all the trappings that the Victorians did, and you want to check all the boxes and do all the flowers, do it. But you're doing that for you. The funeral is for the family and the loved ones and those that are left behind. The funeral is not for the person who has died. The person who's died is gone. You
Very
do
true.
what makes you feel best and what you're comfortable with. And it's like you said a while ago, what other people think about you, not any of your business. And if somebody tries to tell you what they think about what you did for your mother's funeral, tell them you're not interested. And ask them why they would have done anything different.
I wonder if someone had no knowledge of funeral practice, like what they would come up with, for a funeral. Isn't that interesting? If they knew nothing about Victorian era, if they had never attended a funeral in their life, what would they do to remember the person they love?
Well, if you think about practically what you would do with a dead body, it's not put it on display.
True.
I mean, if you just think about it from a logical perspective, it's not put somebody you love on display for people to walk by. And when your heart is broken and you're grieving, you don't want to meet people you haven't seen for 20 years and try to rack your brain to remember who they are.
Right.
In a
That
visit,
is an uncomfortable situation, isn't it?
it's terrible. And so, if you think about a logical thing, grief is not something that I would put on display for public consumption in a visitation. And I understand that people want to pay their respects. Send a note. Don't make me perform for you in a visitation next to my dead loved one that everybody's coming by and looking at. But again, I told you when we started, I have some different ideas about all of this because I have studied the Victorians and I know why we do the things we do.
Sure. I do have an overtime question here because
Hit me.
if I don't ask, I'll be like, why did you not ask her? But one of the things I'm really interested in is people's tears. And I know that there are the tear jars where they would actually collect. Did that start in Victorian era, or are you familiar with that?
I do not think, I have never read that in the Victorian era. And
Okay.
given what I know about them, I would not think so, because
They were hiding that.
the expression of emotion would not have been something they would have embraced. I would not think so. Now, I could be wrong about that because I could have missed that, but I would not think so.
Yeah, I don't know where the practice started or where it was most common, but people would like take these tear jars, collect the tears, and then give them almost as a sign of their grief to the families of whoever lost the loved one. I don't know. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll have to do some more digging on that one myself,
Yeah, I
but
don't know about that. But thanks for so much for having me on today. I love the Victorians, and like I told you, I could talk about them all day.
yeah, this is it's been a good break. I love bringing people on to hear about their stories of loss and grief, but to know why we do what we do, I think is very important for us to have these lessons, to find out why do we continue to send flowers to funerals, and of course now we have in lieu of flowers, like, donate to this cause or that cause. Sounds more logical to me, in memory of, like, send money to St. Jude or
Right.
whatever.
Right.
We don't need the flowers for the purposes they once served.
Correct.
Anyway, yeah, Samantha, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's been so much fun. And I hope that everybody listening has had a good break for just listening to grieving stories and just kind of learning a little bit about the backgrounds of why we do what we do. So thank you so much for being here.
Happy to have been here, and I hope you have a great day, and I hope you enjoyed your vacation.
Thank you very much. And listeners, thanks for tuning in again to Grief Observe Podcast. If you want to be on the show, please give me a shout, whether it's on email or Facebook. And if you've connected with Samantha or have questions for her, I'll have her email in the show description, as well as a link to her article. I definitely encourage you to read it, and learn just a little bit more about why we do what we do. Most importantly, I say grieve the way you want to grieve, and feel no guilt for that. Until next time, I hope you are well, and can't wait for you to join us on the next episode. Have a great day, everyone.